Good evening. The part of the impetus for this this class was a story that happened to me a few years ago. I was at home minding my own business when I received a call from the Netherlands. And I was told the following, that the Netherlands, it sounds a little bit like the Israeli political system, where everybody and their grandmother can open up their own political party if they want, and any small interest, if they get enough votes, can get a seat in the parliament. There's something in the Netherlands called the Animal Party. Kind of has a nice ring to it. And the Animal Party, their issue is animal rights. And they were pushing forward a law in the Netherlands which would prohibit the slaughter of animals without shocking them first. According to normative halacha, we do not allow an animal to be shocked prior to slaughtering it because we think the shocking itself, the electrical jolt, could kill the animal or at least put it in a situation where it would die shortly thereafter. We only allow shchita, we only allow ritual slaughter on healthy animals. So therefore, by doing this, in fact, it would stop the possibility of kosher meat in the Netherlands. And there was something that they would were hoping I could help them with. So they called me up about it. And as I worked with them, it was very interesting. There was a work group of people throughout the world who were trying to work with the Jewish community. Among the people very involved were the Muslims, because halal has the same rule, that halal will not allow the meat to be shocked, stunned, as they call it, before slaughtering it. And therefore, the idea was that our concerns was their concerns. And it was actually very interesting because I made friends with all these Muslim halal people throughout the world. And I get notes like Happy Rosh Hashanah cards on for Ramadan from years because, you know, just wishing me well. It's a very interesting.
Their shechita is like ours too?
Their shechita is like our shechita as well. And in fact, the kosher slaughterhouses oftentimes will do halal meat because they rely on shechita as halal. There is an issue, though. The only rule that they have that we don't have is you have to face Mecca when you slaughter. We don't require you to face Mecca or even New York.
But
we say you can...
Ma'akev, right?
What?
But it's not ma'akev if you're facing.
Right. No, that's the question. The question is that considered avodah zarah? Is that idol worship if we would agree to do that? So I think we try not to do it. And I think b'di'eved, they allow it if you don't face Mecca. Yes.
The opposite is not true. Halal is not kosher.
Halal is not kosher. That is correct.
Why is that?
Well, I mean, part of the issue is we don't rely on them. So it's an issue of you have to trust the person who did it, and we're playing by different rules. So
my understanding is also any male can do halal slaughtering. That was...
Right.
What
I love.
So? Right, but you have to get it right, though.
Exactly. You also have
right. Again, our in terms of the type of knife that you have to use, the type of incision that has to be made, etc., the Jewish law is much more exacting than halal, my understanding is. And I remember at the time having this discussion where the people said to me that, we'll be honest with you, we don't need to have shechita in the Netherlands. The Jewish community, in at least the kosher consumer community in the Netherlands at the time, it was 3-4 years ago, was down to around 3,000. And to really, it didn't make economic sense to support their own slaughterhouse. It made more sense to import. But they said, we're fighting this very hard because we know if we lose this, the next law is going to ban bris milah. Inevitably, it's going to go against circumcision. Therefore, we know we have to block it right here. And the proof that animal rights and shechita is really a first step in a gateway move, shall we say, is from Nazi Germany. The first law that the Nazis made was to ban shechita, and also to ban, this wasn't the Jewish law, vivisection. That right away the Nazis came out in support of animal rights. And of course, I need not say where that went. It's very interesting. When I was in law school, I took a course in war crimes with Telford Taylor. Telford Taylor, I got one or two nodding knowingly. Telford Taylor was the chief prosecutor at Nuremberg. So he looked Goering and Goebbels. Well, he looked them in the eye. He interrogated these people, and his insight was amazing. And I remember him telling us that Charles Goering, a man who sent a million children to their death, when he used to come back to his apartment at night, made sure to take off his shoes outside and not turn on the light because he did not want to disturb his bird. He was very interested in animal rights. And it seems that you have this from time to time, that animal rights come at the expense of human rights. So the question is, in terms of animal experimentation, that kind of is the crossroads. On the one hand, obviously, we care about the animals. On the other hand, what are the other options? Particularly in the area of medicine, right? The first round of tests, you probably don't want to do it on human beings. So the question is, what is Jewish law's approach to this? Now, Jewish law undoubtedly puts a very high value in animal rights. If you look at the first source discusses perhaps the two greatest leaders that the Jewish people have ever had, David HaMelech and Moshe Rabbeinu. And the question that is asked by the Medrash is, why did God choose them? And the Medrash tells us that they both had something in common. They were both shepherds. And therefore, says Badak David Betzonu Matsuro Yafe, God looked down at David and said, he's a mighty fine shepherd. Why? What did he do? Hayamoneh Megadol Mneyaktadim. So what he did when it came time to graze, he held back the adults and he allowed the younger sheep to go first. Why? Because they could only eat the soft grass. So they would go first. Then he brought out the elderly sheep. They would be able to eat the next softest grass. And then the healthy men, the healthy adults, could go out and eat whatever was left. They had no problem digesting it. He said, if somebody who cares that much about these sheep, that every one of them should have what they need, a person that has that level of sensitivity is the type of person that I want leading the Jewish people. Similarly, Moshe also was tested through the sheep. When he was washing over Yisro's sheep, one of the young sheep ran away. He ran after him until he reached an area of water. When he finally got to this valley, he began to drink. He said, I didn't realize that you were so thirsty, that's why you ran away. You must be very tired after this run. He put him over his shoulder and he walked with him. Amar Kosh Baruch Hu, Yeshecha Rachim on the Nihayt Tzong Shel Basar Adam, Kach Hayecha Ata Tira Tzoni Yisrael. I see that you have the sensitivity, that you care enough to take care of the sheep of mankind. You are the person I want. So clearly the greatest leaders that we have had have proven themselves through the way they have treated animals. Every person has a certain degree of commandments that have to do with how we treat animals. For example, the Gemara tells us in Brachos in number 2, the Gemara's got English translations today, Rav Yehuda Omer, Asur Adam Sheyochal Kodem Sheyite Machal Lebehemto. We're not allowed to eat until we feed our animals first. Shenamar, as it says, V'nasati Esa B'salchol V'hemtecha V'hadav V'echalta V'savata. When we say Shema every day, it says that I will put grass in the fields for your animals. And then it says, and you will eat and you will be satiated. Meaning, first we care about the animals, and then we care about you. So this isn't a matter of, obviously the animal welfare is something that is paramount in Jewish law. The question, however, is to what extent? Obviously, there is no obligation in Jewish law for us to be vegetarians. The fact that we have discussed up until now the very many laws which deal with how we are supposed to slaughter our meat, if there was an obligation to be vegetarians, there wouldn't be a discussion about how to slaughter our animals. So the question is, where do we draw the line? On the one hand, we have to treat our animals with great sensitivity and great respect. On the other hand, we eat them. So how does that work out? There is a famous story which appears in the Gemara in Bava Metzia. The Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us that Rebbe was forced to suffer many years of suffering. Why was this so? Why did he have to have such a miserable time of his life? The Gemara tells an amazing story. He said, "Derebi al yidei ma'isa bo v'yidei ma'isa halachu." He got into the trouble by doing something. He got out of it by doing something. What was that something? Al yidei ma'isa bo ma'i. What did he do to get himself deserving of this? Dahu igla da'havin ka mimatu le reshchita. There was certain calf that was being taken out to the slaughter. Azal tayla reshi bekafte derebi. The animal ran away and hid under the coat of Rebbe and was crying. So Rebbe turned to the calf and said, "Listen, go back. This is what you were created for." Because he did not have mercy on this animal, he had to be punished. He had to go through suffering. And it went away based on another event. There was the maidservant was sweeping the house. And when she was sweeping up, there were young weasels lying there, and she was going to sweep them out the door. Let him be. God is merciful over all the creations. He has shown himself to be merciful. We will be merciful on him. So it's interesting. The question is, what did he do wrong here exactly? It seems that that we see this as true, right? The purpose of cows ultimately is to be eaten. Right, this animal is running away, and he said, "Listen, you know, this is how you were created." But somehow or another, that was seemed to be somehow insensitive to the animal. And only until later on does he develop a sensitivity towards animals, does his punishment end. So the Marsha is actually curious what happened. And he says as follows. He says, "V'hamavur shamala igla da'ave kamemati le reshchita, lekach netzarta." He says the key word here is egel. What does the word egel mean? Egel is a calf. What's the difference between a cow and a calf?
Baby.
Age. It's a young cow. It's a calf. So he says as follows. He says the story was that you could turn to a human being and say as well, if a person's dying, say, "Listen, everybody dies." If I worked into a cancer ward and I said to someone, "You know, on the one hand, your prognosis doesn't look good. But on the other hand, hey, you had to die eventually anyhow, didn't you?" So that
might be a consolation if the guy's 99 or 98.
Right, you know, so...
Or not.
What?
Or not.
Or not. But the idea being is that obviously you wouldn't say it to a human being, and you most definitely would not say it to a young human being. Right? So to here. Yeah, animals, you know, they go and they work and they give milk or whatever they were meant to do. And then at some point, later in their life, you know, that's how it tends to end. So, but here this was a very young calf. So this indication is to a certain extent what is considered proper treatment of animals is somehow or another compared to the proper treatment of human beings. Just like you, this would not, you know, if a person, you know, I'm sure doctors see this from time to time. You have a patient who's who's brought in with cancer in their 90s. And you say, listen, there are many aggressive therapies we could do. However, at your age, you might think about what you would want to do. Obviously, these are very difficult. They come with suffering, etc. On the other hand, we could offer you palliative care, and we could keep you comfortable, and we could keep you at home, and we could keep you near your grandchildren, etc. You would never say that to a younger person. Right? So too, it seems that Rebbe went wrong here by saying, by being insensitive in a way that would be considered insensitive to human beings. So the level of sensitivity that we're asking for people with animals seems to be a very high one. On the other hand, there are other statements in the Gemara which seem to indicate that a person doesn't have to worry about this. And in fact, a person can injure animals or even kill animals if they so desire. For example, the Gemara in Chulin, Rechia Nafale Yamda Bikitna. He had a problem that he had, sounds like lice of some sort in his clothing. Also, Kamei, the Rebbe. What do I say? He went to Rebbe and said, what do I do? I'm like, Shokel Ofa Veshokhet Hu Bubisa Demaya. He said, take a bird and slaughter it over the water. Demarach Dama Veshavikli. When these lice will smell the blood, they'll run out of your clothing and they'll go to the water that's full of blood. So let's focus on this, not from the lice point of view, but from the bird point of view. Right? The bird point of view got killed. Why? Not because anyone was going to eat the bird, but we're killing a bird in order to delouse my clothing.
Seems extreme.
But it's allowed. That does not seem to be something that is achzorious. Doesn't seem to be a lack of sensitivity, etc.
Now, why doubt the bird? Do the lice distinguish between bird blood and, let's say, goat blood or kid blood?
So again, I would imagine that probably the bird is cheapest of what you have mentioned, right? I'm sure if I would have if I wanted to. Shech my chad gadya.
Does this bird sing?
What? Steve Feldman told me a story. He said this is the most interesting case he ever had. He said a woman walked in with a gray African parrot, and the parrot had a terrible cough, which is hacking. So he took a look at it. They thought maybe, you know, it's a problem with the lungs. They looked. They checked this bird up and down. They couldn't find anything wrong with the bird, and she kept on bringing it back. Cost her hundreds of dollars, and for the life of them, they can't diagnose what's going on with the bird. And one day, the woman walks in with the bird again, and she's hacking. And he says to her, you caught it from him? So now I've had this cough for years. And they all paused, and they realized that the parrot was just imitating her. that was the entirety of the diagnosis.
That took a really long time.
Right. She then killed the bird on the way home. Had him for dinner.
I wanted to ask, you don't think that this was insensitive?
So the Gemara doesn't. So yeah, I'm not taking my idea of sensitivity and placing it on the Gemara.
Okay.
I'm trying to develop what it is based on what the Gemara is telling
okay.
me.
It does seem a lack of sensitivity.
Okay, so it's machokas right now between the Gemara and Patty Zetlin.
To louse your clothes.
Well, why? Let me ask you why.
Because you're asking an animal to give up its life to louse your clothes.
No, you're not asking.
I mean, you're doing it. Right, you're not asking.
Okay.
You're taking it.
But you're okay if it gives up its life for my chicken soup?
Yeah, I mean, yes.
Mm-hmm. And are you okay with it giving up its life for my coat?
Not as easily.
But?
I know what you are. The question is the price.
I'm saying it does make sense in terms of eating and feeding and all of that. When it starts to get to be your coat, that's a little different. But to just kill it so you...
Right, so the question is, so again, what we're getting at here is where are we going to draw that line?
Right, that's
right.
True.
Right. That's what we're trying to figure out. Right. You're saying that you agree that in certain cases yes, in certain cases no. And the question is, where do we draw the line?
Okay.
So the Gemara is telling us that the lousing your clothing is on the can do side of the line. Right, but the argument, it's very hard for me to say, well, the purpose you've been created was to serve me. I feel comfortable saying that. Don't get me wrong, but that's what we're dealing with here, right?
Which so Noah was told,
my point is,
these animals are here to serve you, and you can chef them, you can eat them.
So on the other hand, could Noah, let's say, so we walking out of the ark, we had 2x2, and then we had 7x7. So 7 cows walk out, and he decides, I want steak. Could he have killed all 7 and eaten them?
No, because he had to leave at least a couple to propagate more cows.
Right, so you say that there's a problem with overfishing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Right? So again, and what's the reason for that? Is it because of them or is it because of me? Is it because I have to keep steaks for the next guy? Or is it because I care about the cows?
Yes.
Tuesday. Yes.
Yeah, I think it's because you need to provide for the future generation as well.
Right, so you're saying that they have no...
For bonus and for things like that.
But you're saying they have no rights unto themselves.
That's correct.
So and again, so let's say...
A coat is more important than chicken soup.
Right.
If you're going to freeze to death and you live in the Antarctic,
hey,
a coat is far more important than chicken soup.
I didn't say you couldn't have a coat. I just said I was questionable
after that. Right. You know, I assume it would be hard to keep the chicken, a warm chicken soup, even in the Antarctic, I think, has great value. I'm just saying, doctor. Another case on the other side. So Rebbe one time ran into Pinchas ben Yair, and he said, you're going to be in town, would you mind doing a meal by me? And he said, yeah, and said, oh, that'd be great. Ki asa yisrebi reba ahu pischa dahavi kaimen. Turn the page when he wants the English. They could nisa chavarta. So when Pinchas showed up, he found out that they had white mules there. White mules were known to be very dangerous. Amar malachamavis bebayis beveso shozeh. Fani soed it slow. This guy has the malachamavis, and I'm going to go eat there. So Rebbe got taken aback. He said, I better get rid of these donkeys. Shama Rebbe v'nafak rafet me mazvinen lu. Don't worry, I'll sell them. So someone else is going to have the Malach HaMavis in his house? That'll be better? Merfaknalu. He said, so what am I going to do? I'll just make them Hefker. Right? I'll make them onerous. I'll set them free. She said, Mapasha Hezekah. Great. Now they're going to go killing people all over the place. He said, all right. Akarnalu. I'll hamstring them so they can't get around. She says, Ikert Sal Balei Chayim. That's not being nice to animals. He said, "Katil Nalu." So I'll kill them. He said, "Not Ikabal Tashkis." Then that's destroying them. So he kind of said to him, "Well, you want to take your dinner to go? This just isn't working out." But relevant to our discussion here is that if there was a dangerous animal, so he obviously had a need to hamstring the animals, right? The guests would have left, right? According to the other guests, they were dangerous. And still in that case, that was on the Cantorwood side. So the question we have to work around is, where do we put that line? Clearly, we have for certain needs, we have a right to kill animals and use them as we want, as we wish. And for other needs, we don't have the right. So how do we draw that line? And for example, animal experimentation, on what side of the line does that fall?
Do you know anything about this white mules being dangerous?
I don't know anything about white mules.
I've never heard that before, so.
I've never heard that there are white mules. I mean, I've heard it before, and I've heard that they're dangerous, but I've only heard them in the Talmud.
Why are they dangerous?
I've never actually, you know, ran into them. And,
I know it's an aside. I just wondered.
No. But S.D. Feldman, maybe he can answer that one.
Okay.
The Shulchan Aruch discusses this regarding spaying and neutering animals. So you're not allowed to spay or neuter animals. So the Shulchan Aruch says, "Also, lomer lo bikachom l'asar spay mer shalanu." Not only that, but you can't even take it to a non-Jewish vet and have them do it for you. If I happen just to bring my dog into the vet, and they say, you know, just want the checkup, and the vet says, congratulations, you're the 100th customer. I also took care of that other problem for you. Well, it's not your problem. If you brought him in and said, I want the checkup, you know, when whatever you think would be good, you can do that as well. I hereby authorize you to do whatever you consider medically necessary. Kon sinoso, you get punished for that.
Yeah, this is because it's not necessarily for the need of the owner of the animal, or for that matter, the vet.
So again, this is
interfering with the Kodesh Baruch Hu's decree that the humans and animals should populate the world.
So I don't think this is related to Tzar Balei Chaim at all.
Right.
Right. I agree with that. However, I think the Rama is, which is where we're going with this. So, where's the discuss what we can do? Then two lines from the bottom in the Rama. Kol davar hatzarchu refua l'shar dvarim les be'mishum iser tzar balei chayim. Anything that you have that is necessary for healing or anything else is no problem of tzar balei chayim. This seems to be a very broad definition. If you need it,
cauterize a wound and it's going to burn the animal. He's going to have pain. And that's true, by the way, with humans as well. I mean, if you have a child, you can't explain to them that this is going to be very powerful.
Right,
they don't understand that there's a greater good.
Forget greater good. Let's say, you know, I am a scribe and I need a feather. So you just take an animal and pluck it off? Probably hurts when you yank one of those off a live animal.
Feathers, but is that a painful thing? I mean, the animals shed feathers all the time.
So I think plucking a big one is painful.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it would be.
Right.
Pluck a little one.
I'm a big boy. I need a big one. So the question is, what about that? So he says, well, chen muter limrot notzos me avazos chayos. I'm allowed to pluck feathers out of living geese. And that would not be a problem. However, people do not do it because it is achzarius. How would you translate achzarius?
Cruelty.
Cruelty, exactly. So the Rama seems to be making the point here that there are really two different things. That there is the letter of the law, and under the letter of the law, technically, animal was created for the sake of man. And therefore, whatever the needs of man are, they are, and therefore one has a right to do as they wish. On the other hand, we have to develop our own moral character, and being mean to animals, even if technically allowed, is problematic on a different moral level.
So if you can devise a way that you're not hurting the animal and it's not cruelty...
Correct.
Ideally, yeah.
So one would have to. So again, as we'll develop here, one has to come up with a decision. Now, it would seem to be a few considerations that come in here. One is, how much does it hurt the animal? And two is, how much do I need it? There is a discussion. This idea that one cannot be cruel to animals, is this biblical or is this rabbinic in nature? The Rush in number 8 tells us that it is biblical. Still running. So it says, Amar Yehuda Behemah Shnuffle Ema Samayim. We just had this actually in the Rambam shiur not too long ago.
So it tells you have to help the guy unload it. You have to.
Right, Tiina Prika, correct. So he says, in the event the animal falls into a pool of water on Shabbos, so animals are muksa on Shabbos. You throw in pillows and blankets in order to create a ramp that the animal can get out. But now these blankets and pillows won't be usable on Shabbos anymore. That's a rabbinic violation. Right? He says, my time of bitul klimei hechano derabanan. That's only rabbinic. But tzar balei chayim doraisa. However, tzar balei chayim, right, cruelty to animals is a biblical prohibition, and that's more serious. That is the opinion of the Rush. The Rambam does not necessarily agree. It's very hard to tell. What the Rambam basically says is the rule that Dr. Jacobs referred to in the Torah, that in the event that there is an animal that is struggling beneath its load, I have to help unload it. Does that only apply to an animal that's owned by a Jew? Or even an animal that's owned by a non-Jew?
It says on
the animal.
Right, so the Rambam says it has to do with whether the person is a Jew or not, the owner. Right, so the question is, and therefore what?
Right.
So in the event we're really concerned with the animal cruelty, it really wouldn't make a difference whether it was owned by a Jew, non-Jew, or it was non-domesticated. If it was a wild animal, I would have to treat it well as well. Right? If I say this is some sort of rabbinic idea, then perhaps there are limitations. Yes?
Your goyish neighbor's cow doesn't have to rest on Shabbos, but yours does.
Right. So yes, so
there's a distinction between
right. So the question is: this a specific rule in pre-cantina?
Between them and us.
Yeah. Right. If you see an animal suffering under a load, what difference does it make whether the owner is a Jew or not a Jew?
Right. So assuming if you're again, so if you're assuming that this is a biblical commandment that animals should not suffer, you can't, right, and therefore you have to alleviate their suffering, then you're right. That's why some people say the Rambam is the opinion that it's not biblical, it's only rabbinic. That's a discussion.
This reminds me of the discussion of your friend Herschel Schachter when he was here. He said that a doctor is not supposed to treat a non-Jew on Shabbos, with which I completely disagree. I mean, it's a human being.
Mm-hmm. So I think I believe that doctors do treat non-Jews. I don't think it's because we follow Ted Engel against Rabbi Herschel Schachter. I don't think that's the reason for the psak. Me too. I'd put that under doubt also. What?
Why would he say that?
Because the Gemara says it's an issue.
You don't do a check on their lineage before you resuscitate a guy who goes
exactly.
down.
Exactly. They go down.
Excuse me. Was her mother Jewish? Can you give me a little bit of family?
You just do the CPR.
Can I see your grandmother's tombstone?
Yeah.
Yes.
So is a chance.
So that is a distinction between the rights and the rabbanim, probably. But I had the following friendly argument with Moshe Tendler many decades ago when I was in biology. Not for majors.
Mm-hmm.
He brought in a bunch of frogs for us to dissect. And I objected. He said, but you have to, you know, this is biology. I said,
but I'm a poet.
If you're a major, I support that. If you're not a major, you should have the right to opt out. And after we talked a while, he agreed.
Mm-hmm. So you took physics?
No, this was
I was saying.
You failed
my
business course. I failed them all. That's another story.
It's good that there was a family business, huh? I guess that worked out. So the Aruch HaShulchan tells us, and the Mishnah Berurah agrees with this, that we believe that the overwhelming majority of people think that this is a biblical rule. And as such, that we treat it with all the due respect that a biblical rule gets.
But in the pasuk, I think it says.
Right. So why the Rambam? And it could be that the Rambam doesn't disagree with that. But that's a discussion. What is the biblical source for it then? So the Marshal comments that it's really not clear. One possibility you had mentioned is the idea that you're supposed to help unload an animal, right? But that's a question. You know, let's say my friend is driving his car and the car is overloaded and it's going to blow out the tires, right? And he needs some help. Should I help him unload his car? I shouldn't help him. You're a nasty person.
No. You're talking Shabbos, right?
No.
Oh, it's Shabbos anytime.
Tuesday.
Well, if he's going to blow out his car, yes, I'll help him unload his car.
Right?
It's not an animal. That's my issue.
No, his car is not an animal.
Right.
You might name it. You might treat it well. right? But it's not an animal.
By the time of plus, the owner of the car as well as the cattle.
Right.
I'd say you're going to blow your tires out.
Right. Right. So the question is, when it says that the donkey is overloaded.
Yeah.
Right. Is and I have to help unload it. Am I doing it for the owner that he shouldn't lose his donkey?
No, I'm doing it because it's cruel to the animal.
Well, that's what you're assuming, but one doesn't have to assume that way. Right? Just the fact that there's a rule that I have to help him unload.
But, I mean, that I get that.
He knows he has to unload it, but the load is so heavy.
Yes.
The animal's going to break its back.
Yes.
So you help out to quickly unload it and save the animal.
Yes.
And save him the loss of
an animal.
Expensive white donkey.
Yes.
Murderous white donkey.
Murderous white donkey.
I'm in two separate intros. Ozov Tazo has focused on the human, that you have to help the human, and the other, Rovetz Tachas Masao. Is it the same?
I think it's the same. I think
it's the Pazo?
What? It's close. I think Re'eh or Shoftim, I would say. That would be. One of those parshas with a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right.
I think it benefits both of them.
Right, but that's the question. So what I'm saying is follows. I'm looking for a source that one can't be cruel to animals. Right? A potential source is that I have to unload the animal that's struggling under its load.
Right.
But I can make a strong argument, I think, that I'm doing that for the sake of the owner, that he doesn't have to buy a new animal. I could also make the argument I'm doing it for the animal.
I was going to say, yes, you can, but why? Why do you need a strong argument for the owner of the animal?
What do you mean?
In other words, I'm saying you unload that animal because it's breaking its back, but it also benefits the owner.
Well, I think that the way it goes, and I'm sure Dr. Teitelbaum will find it shortly, but the way it goes, it says, it says, sonacha, right? Isn't that the word? Your enemy's animal is struggling beneath its load. So why my enemy's?
Because I guess it doesn't matter whether it's a friend or an enemy.
Right. So again, most things don't. So if it's about the animal, right? So it's an odd thing. You're saying to me that even though he's your enemy, and usually you'd stick it to him for the sake of the animal, don't do it. That's hard to believe, because I can't believe that we support that usually you'd stick it to him.
Right. You could if...
Right, so the fact that it's your enemy, says the president, he's your enemy, help him out. Right, so again, so that is a potential source, but again, it's not ironclad. Right, so that being said, there are other possibilities. I give you one here in number 11, the Sefer Chassidim, learns it out from Bilam's donkey. The fact that Bilam gets castigated for whipping his donkey. So some people take that as the source that you have to treat animals right. And that's coming up in next week's Parsha, so I feel at least worth noting that opinion. Practically, let's get to what we care about most now, and that is animal experimentation. Right, the issues of animal experimentation have been in the popular press since around the 1820s. That's when the British equivalent of the ASPCA was started. And that was that the first time when people started protesting that animal experimentation is problematic. The first tshuva I give you is from the Chalkas Yaakov. This tshuva was written in the 1940s, where he writes, bottom line, Tinavi di dan de inron mocker nemer gar the yeshlo tzarech oshayach tzar barachayim. So he says, I am not convinced that whenever you need it, there is no tzar balei chayim. Just because I need it doesn't make it allowed.
Mishpatim.
Right? Mishpatim. Okay.
Is that where it is?
Yeah.
Verse and chapter?
Coming up here. Too small for me to read.
So while the eyes adjust. He said, "Oh, let me call on the Alpha, the Alpidin, Vaday Mutaligram Sarba Chaim de Nisyonos, Bishvil Chaikiris Madayit." He said, "The bottom line is, according to Torah, law, straight, you are allowed to experiment on animals in order to get scientific knowledge. Well, Chokhmas Arifua, and to learn medicine. Aval Pi Chasidus Rinotzel Mimidus Achzarius Vaday Osir. However, because doing this leads one to be cruel, it develops a cruel nature, you're not allowed to do it. Pasak harama, just like the Rama said in Evan Ezer, Lina Limro, notzos chayos. It's like plucking the goose. V'davka b'shchita mutter. The only time you're allowed to do it is to eat. But beyond that, nothing. B'shem di'ef shabed ninachar. There's no other way you can do it. So therefore he says that technically he agrees that cruelty to animals is not violated by doing animal experimentation for the sixth sense. Yes. Okay. So the translation would say when you see your enemy's animal falling beneath his burden, don't withhold, stand by, withhold his, but rather go and help together with him. A few things I think Rashi comments there is azov ta azov imo, is that if a donkey is under tremendous pressure, and it's my donkey, and I say, hey, you have a mitzvah to unload him.
That doesn't work. It has to be with
him. So what would you say?
Imo.
I'd say, you have to help me do this.
And I say, but I'm not obligated to unload my donkey. You're obligated to unload my donkey, because you hate me.
You're making this animal suffer.
Well, you're making it suffer because you're not doing anything.
You have an obligation to unload your animal and take better care of it.
Well, you can sit here and talk with me all day, and that's the animal is struggling. So it indicates, perhaps, the fact that we're so interested that I have to help indicates it's a matter of your relationship with me, not your relationship with the animal.
No, I'd start unloading the donkey.
But the Torah says you don't have to. If I stand here like this, you can say, okay,
well,
you're a donkey.
About the donkey more than your obstinate.
The obstinate mule.
The obstinate mule standing outside the donkey.
Right. So the Chokas Yaakov is actually ultimately opposed to animal experimentation. Not that he thinks that the Torah says it's wrong, but rather the effect on the lab technician is what it comes down to.
Right.
Yes.
It has nothing to do with my relationship with him, or vis-a-vis the what has to do with, or even necessarily the animal, but rather that it's one of Hashem's creatures.
Well, the animal or the owner. I think they're both Hashem's creatures.
Granted, but my point is you shouldn't necessarily see the animal suffer because Hashem. Granted, we should have better interpersonal relationships, but I'm saying I don't have a relationship with the animal at all.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you would think I could stick it to the owner because I don't like that owner, so I'm not going
to. Right, but the bottom line is the fact that we are told that if the owner refuses to do it with you, I don't have to do his work for him, despite the fact that the animal would be suffering.
Well, I would do is I would just unload the animal until he wasn't suffering anymore. That's what I would do.
Right, then I would shoot the animal to stick it to the owner.
You think I'm cruel.
This is the opinion of the Chalkas Yaakov, right? The Sridei Eish, he has this in the Sridei Eish, but it also gets reprinted in the next Tshuva in the Chalkas Yaakov, disagrees vehemently. He says, "Sof davar dino shel kol v'asher demutar l'tzar b'chayim b'shvil toeras chachma harefua." The fact that he says, bottom line, is you're allowed to do this for the sake of medicine. V'lo od elo shelifnei aldas ein kan gam midas chatzius demir chatzius eno elo b'makom shnei grak atzmo. What do you mean? That really I'm allowed to do it, but you know, I'm going to be, I want to be a kind person, so I'm not going to do this to the animal. Great. So I'm trying to find a cure for cancer.
Right?
So I'm going to be a nice guy about it and say, no, I don't want to hurt the animal.
In the meantime,
there's children with cancer that are dying because of this. He says, you don't have a right to say, well, I want to be a nice guy, as we say, afyedim's plates. At the cost of somebody else. Then, in fact, assuming, as everyone does, that animal experimentation is allowed, if that's the case, animal experimentation is obligatory. If there is potential that you could find some advancement in medicine through animal experimentation, he disagrees strongly with the first opinion. He doesn't say that you're technically allowed to, but you shouldn't. He says technically you're allowed to, and you must. The truth is, this opinion really goes back a long way. The Shvus Yaakov, who lived late 17th, early 18th century, got the question himself, Am I allowed to take a medicine and give it to a cat or a dog to see what happens, because I'm not sure how people will react to it? Let's see if they drop dead. So he says, Tshuva, Ikra Haino Dina Kvar Amrua, but Tshuva's Masos Binyamin, their previous sources, etc., where he says, Halacha Maisa, the Kol Sheyesh Bo Shum Tzorach O Refua Saguf O Hanos Mamon, the Ein Zer Shum Chshash Isra Bal Tashkut Sor Tzav Bal Chaim. If there's a purpose for this, for sure medical, but even monetary purpose, I'm allowed to do what I have to do to animals. So this seems to be very broad. He has a second response in number 15, where he says, "Lasos tzar ba'echaim kazeh b'shvil hanah muetes vadei lo avdinan." If it's something, if you're going to really hurt an animal, and we're going to gain very little for that,
just for the sake of hurting him,
right? Even if you gain something, that is not worth it. So that's interesting, because I don't think anyone would argue. No, that's not true. I think right people thinking people would not argue that life saving medications, right, should not be tried on animals if this is a way of making sure we're safer before we get into the realm of human experimentation. But let's talk about mascara. Right, let's talk about women's cosmetics. An awful lot of animal experimentation happens to animals, not for life-saving cures. Should that be allowed? That's mascara.
You put it on your eyelashes. I put it on that. You don't put it on.
Thanks for helping him out. What? Did any animal ever get killed by being sent to space?
Yeah.
I don't know. Dr. Moshe Levy sent up some rats on the last space shuttle, if I remember correctly, and they survived well until they got back and he took out their kidneys. I think they enjoyed the trip very much. They sent postcards, selfies, etc. But once the kidneys came out, the party was over. Well, generally, I assume what it is. Right. Generally, I assume that's how it's done. That's the normal. You have a medication, right? Before, you start telling people, okay, let's go through a few trials to see what happens.
It's safe to take it.
Right. And I think no one would argue with that. You know, I don't even think it has, I don't think, even if it wasn't life-saving, you know, let's say, I don't know, it's an acne medicine.
It can make you ill.
Right, and acne medicine. You know, so you can say, okay, so don't use acne medicines. No one's. How many people have died from acne? Huh? Not so many.
But back to the mascara.
So the question is, where do you draw the line? Is mascara? But if you don't test it on the animals, so women could have reactions to it,
right?
So the answer is, tell them not to put on mascara. There are people in the world that never even heard of mascara. If you can imagine such a thing, right? Right, so that's the question, where do you draw the line? That would be, yes?
If it's obligatory that sort, who is obligated? Like the seabird or yachting?
For what?
Like if you're obligated to.
If I assume the scientist is. If the scientist has the ability to do this, right, the scientist has a potential medication. So he has three possibilities. He could just walk away from it, he could test it on animals, or he could test it on humans. It's obligatory that he test it on animals, not go test it on humans, right? And not just walk away from it. To end with a modern-day tshuva on the topic, the Tzitz Eliezer says, Mikol ha'amor, this is the bottom line, Nira ha'alacha b'dina she'oseinu, she'mut rasos ha'mecher be'enayim shel ba'lechaim, l'chein la'amisan l'achar mikan l'mataras shimash be'ivchon b'nei adam. He says that all sorts of animal exploitation is allowed. However, you should go out of your way to make this as painless as possible to the animals, including anesthesia. He says, if this is painful, so give the animal anesthesia, even if it's going to cost you a few dollars. It's local. That's Hadamas Hamakom. But Kodome, Ba'ofin Shabbat Chai, Ro Yagish Sar. Ani Matari, Shebein, Kach, Mechusha, Ripsoa, Dover, Kazer, Betsura, Kazos. He said, yes, there really are two issues. One issue is Tzar Balei Chaim. If there is a use for it, there's no need. However, there is an idea that we care about our moral well-being, we care about our moral character, and we should not be cruel. So therefore, even if it costs extra money, even if it's more difficult, right, the bottom line is we should do whatever we can to make this as easy as possible on the animals.
What role does Shiloh HaKain play here?
So it says, "Kol ha'omer
ha." What is that?
The chasing away of the mother bird.
Ah.
Kol ha'omer, kol ha'omer.
Because of
right.
Animal cruelty.
Right. So according to that, it plays no role whatsoever. Al kantipu yagir rechemecha. So I think that's the bottom line. And the bottom line is we do care very much about animal rights, etc. We want what's best for the animals. However, animals were put on the world in this earth, you know, to serve us, whether it be that we ultimately eat them or in any other way, whether it's to use them for a coat or whether it is to use them as a form of experimentation. Right? We use them to carry our loads. We've used them for years. We ride on horses. Right? This is their purpose. However, we still have to treat them right. That just because we have a right to use them doesn't mean that we have a right towards animal cruelty. Right? Right? So the idea being that we absolutely, again, if there is a need, you have a right to do it. What? Machlokes. Magen Avraham says that. So the bottom line is that animal experimentation is broadly allowed. However, we should try to do it in the kindest way possible. It's interesting. They point out that around 200,000 animals are used in laboratories a year. They also point out that there are 10 million. What?
It's got to be more than that. 200,000.
That was the number I found. Right? And they also say that there are 10 million stray cats and dogs in the streets. And animals in the lab tend to live much better than strays in the streets.
Yes, but we've seen those terrible pictures of monkeys that have been
right,
and they're experimenting on their brains and the poor monkey is screaming and it's like...
Right, but I don't think that's the general...
I hope not.
I assume that. I hope and assume that. Right. So the idea is that is inappropriate. Right, if there's any way to avoid it, it absolutely should be avoided. However, the answer is not to stop animal experimentation. Yes.
So, given the fact that there's millions of stray dogs and cats, what is the problem with neutering some of them so there aren't going to be millions?
So many.
A lot of homeless people also. I'll leave it at that.